This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is our history doctor, Bill Smith. Welcome back.
Glad to be back.
Today we're going to talk about presidential vacations. Some people have called President Obama the vacation president.
Well, President Obama has certainly had his share of holiday visits in his first year, but you know his numbers aren't at the top of the range. They're not at the bottom of the range either for the POTUS taking time off.
Let's see. The current first family has, there have been recent trips to Martha's Vineyard, trip to the Gulf, Chicago. Michelle Obama went to Europe.
Two things that make Obama's travel very noticeable, I think, right now in the news media as we look at that part of it. First, we've gone through the Gulf oil issues, and that focused a lot of attention on where was the president and what he was doing, and particularly among his political enemies. The second one is, in a general downturn of economy, those in economic distress don't like to see elites having a good time. That's where Obama is, I think, somewhat hurt by his historical circumstances, plus the fact his family doesn't have a compound to retreat to, like the Kennedys or the Bushes, and he doesn't already have his established vacation spot like the ranches that Ronald Reagan or George W. Bush had. He's a lot like Bill Clinton in this area.
Well, you've mentioned several of our last few presidents. Where does President Obama stack up when it comes to vacation?
Mark Noller of CBS has made a career of being the chronicler of presidential minutia, including things like vacation days over the past couple of decades. Even the Library of Congress calls him to ask questions about data points such as this. So here's the way that Noller breaks it down. First year on the job, and total tenure. So obviously, with Barack Obama, it's not fair to compare him to Ronald Reagan, George W. Bush, two-term presidents. So let's go back and look at first year on the job numbers. These are Noller's numbers, the ones that are being repeated in the media. President Obama, to this day's recording, has taken 70 days of vacation in his first year in office. Now, George W. Bush has the record at 120 days. Still possible, not probable for the current sitting president. Ronald Reagan took 42. Bush 41 took 40. Bill Clinton took only 21 days. And the low record belongs to Jimmy Carter with 19.
Are presidential vacations a recent phenomenon?
Well, you know, we have to remember that the vacation is a bit of an industrial era invention all the way around. Our cycles of work were based around the seasons in the past when we were a more agrarian society. Vacation was called winter. You didn't have a day off when you were working the farm. You didn't have a day off when you were working livestock. And even politicians through the colonial and the early years of our nation, they would go to the sessions and then they would return home. So it wasn't necessarily like vacation. They simply went away. Founding father presidents didn't typically stay in Washington. Remember, we have to get to Thomas Jefferson before you have a Washington, really, right, to go to and stay in, as in D.C. And Thomas Jefferson, as a matter of fact, has the record for one of the longest absences from D.C. to stay at Monticello. We need to look at pre- and post-Second World War for sort of our distinctions in vacations. In the era before the Second World War and the demands that sort of came to the presidency through a global commitment, through the Cold War era, you know, today you really don't ever have a president that's away from it all.
Right.
Thanks to secure communications, including very real versions of those telepresences you used to see on 24 when the president would go into the room and talk to the world leader. So in some ways, detractors that even want to take a shot at Bush 43's time in Texas overall are looking at the fact that while he was away more, communication connectivity made it such that he was as in the White House as he wanted to be.
Yeah, I mean, when the president in this modern age takes a vacation, is he really taking a vacation at all?
True. And so in that way, when you look at Barack Obama's 70 to date and the 121st year for George W., you have to ask, in this Cold War need to connect it for the commander-in-chief duties and even the current office holders' well-known BlackBerry habit, you know, is a vacation just that? A chance to leave the job behind.
What about Camp David?
You know, that is the one constant since the New Deal era for all of our presidents. It started as a WPA project in the Appalachian foothills of upstate Maryland, up in Frederick County. Franklin D. Roosevelt was the first president to use the camp, and he gave it a nickname that was a little more culturally appropriate to the time because of the movies and the lore. He called it Shangri-La. Mm-hmm. And you get that sort of feeling of the place I can go up into the mountains and get away from it all. Roosevelt, of course, had his own special places to go on vacation. He had the family homes in New York, the Campobello Island location for the family in Canada, and Warm Springs, Georgia, of course, where he went to take the waters as a way to relieve the problems of his various physical ailments. Harry Truman used Camp David the least. And ironically, Dwight Eisenhower arrived in the White House intent on getting rid of it.
Really? He wanted to do away with it?
He thought it was superfluous and it was something that could be deactivated, no need for that. Then his own health issues, remember Eisenhower had a couple of heart attacks during his terms, led him to use it extensively for recuperation, including holding the first cabinet meeting there. It was Dwight's grandson that gives us the name by which we know the facility today, Camp David.
I'm wondering, is Camp David unique in a sort of getaway spot that has been used by more than one president?
No. In the early half of the 20th century, President Taft set a precedent of taking time off in Key West, and the small compound on government property there, a little bit of the national park area in Key West, became somewhat of a temporary southern White House, to use that term. You had Eisenhower and John F. Kennedy, when he wasn't at Hyannisport in the Kennedy compound, using it, as well as Truman. That was Truman's preferred place rather than going up to Camp David.
Now, haven't we talked before? Wasn't there, going back a ways, a presidential vacation that has some historical significance or interest? Grover Cleveland?
Yeah, you're right. We had our episode in which we were talking about presidential illness, and it really was the most infamous presidential vacation in 1893.
I love this story. Tell this again.
Okay. Grover Cleveland was in the middle of a very serious financial crisis. I mean, more significant than where we're at now, not Great Depression, you know, probably somewhere in between when you look at it in the historical perspective. This was his second term. Remember, he is our only president that served a term, was voted out, came back. So this is right. The beginning of the second term. And his doctors discovered that he had a tumor in the roof of his mouth.
Right.
Rather than spooking Wall Street in this time of financial upheaval, Cleveland took his vacation on a yacht sailing on the eastern seaboard. This was the cover story.
Right, and tell me about his, and I'm using air quotes here, his vacation. What happened?
Yes, on the 1st of July, his yacht sailed close to Long Island on purpose to be offshore as his doctors performed cancer surgery on the president on the yacht off the coast of New York City in case things went wrong. They wanted to be close to a place where he could be taken to a land-based hospital. So they went through his mouth to avoid any exterior scars and removed this tremendous tumor that was half of his soft palate up into his sinus, a little bit toward his eye socket, and left him with a droopy eye and mouth, and they had to put some prosthesis up in later to sort of plug it in. And, you know, he spoke unusually because, I mean, you think about you lose half the top of your mouth, you're not going to enunciate properly. So the next couple of weeks of his vacation, to use our air quotes again, was really convalescing from this surgery on board a yacht in the area off of Long Island. I mean, and let's put that in perspective. 1893, you know, that's with ether and hoping, because this isn't the era of really solid scientific medical surgery that we're accustomed to today. The very fact that you're going to operate on the president is a bit of a stretch of technology. And now, by the way, we're going to do it at a yacht floating out in the middle of the water inside the president's head.
Bad news. Bad news is we don't have modern technology. Good news is it wasn't in the age of Twitter or Facebook. Can you imagine if you tried to do that now?
No, and that is one of the great long-standing secrets of the presidency. You know, that was kept double top secret for years. And then around 1914, One of the muckraking magazines came out with a story accusing that this had happened. And the doctors that were still alive said, oh, no, 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 no. Until the very last doctor later, you know, they've all passed away. They finally came forward and said, yes. And here's the true story of how Grover Cleveland underwent this surgery in a way to, you know, hide it from the American people.